Welcome to the Sober Edge Podcast, inspiration for alcohol-free living. I'm your host, Terry Patterson, functional nutritionist and This Naked Mind senior coach. The Sober Edge is a place to explore the infinite possibilities on the other side of drinking. In a culture soaked in booze, discover the wonder and joy of taking a different path. Meet real people living lives of purpose and passion, learn the truth behind the alcohol myths, and get ready to be motivated, inspired, and astounded by what is possible with the sober edge. If you have ever tried to make a change, whether it's a habit or a routine or a change around alcohol, one key component is laying the foundation. Having that solid foundation is the difference between trying to balance on a stool with two legs versus a stool with three legs. In other words, there is a huge difference. My guest today, Molly Desch, has created an offering in the alcohol-free space that focuses on what to do first. Together, we explore what it takes to make a lasting change, why behavior comes last, and how to set yourself up for success. Molly is a certified life coach with a degree in psychology. She works with middle-aged working moms who are ready to take back the reins of their lives, who are open to new ways of achieving real results, and just need a little help along the way. The Alcohol Free Foundations program builds a level of confidence that allows women to say goodbye to the control alcohol has over their lives while restoring time and energy to live free. And if you are beyond the foundations and have found freedom from alcohol, I want to invite you to check out my brand new program, The Self Experience. This is a program exclusively for women who have ditched booze and are ready to focus on their amazing life. This isn't a membership or a course. Instead, it's an interactive, immersive experience where we spend 4 months together focusing on how to grow yourself through workshops, coaching, and guest experts. If you're ready to live your life by design, not by default, this is the program for you. The wait list is open now, and we kick off on November 9th. You can find all of the details in the show notes, and I can't wait to see you on the list. You deserve to discover your best self. Well, hey, everyone, it's Terry back with another edition of the Sober Edge podcast. And today I want to introduce you to my new friend, Molly Desch. And Molly has a wonderful coaching business called As You Are Coaching. So welcome to the podcast, Molly.
Thanks, Terry. It's so good to be here.
Yeah, Molly is one of those people that, you know, if you think you can't make friends over the internet, it's not true, because Molly and I have yet to meet in real life. But we are becoming coaching buddies, and I love that about the internet.
I do too. I mean, the people that you meet and that you can just reach people literally all over the world is so fascinating. I love that.
Yeah, I recently did as part of my last newsletter, I was chatting about all the different countries, and I might have even left a couple out, but I started thinking, gosh, I've worked with so many people in different countries, Spain, Sweden, Canada, the UK, Australia, all over the world. And it's just such an incredible way to, you know, we can make real connections, even with people we only meet over the internet. So I was so glad when Molly reached out. And today I really want to talk about the way that you reach your audience around letting go of alcohol, because you really have a different niche than I have. And I want to explore that, how you help people start with kind of the foundation before they stop drinking. So can you tell us about that?
Yeah, of course. So when I first got sober, it was willpower and AA for me. Mm-hmm. So I went to AA for about 3 or 4 months, and it just wasn't doing it for me. Like, I just didn't feel like a real good sense of belonging or community. So I stopped going and was just relying on my willpower, and COVID hit. So I was able to just stay home. I wasn't, you know, tempted to go to the bars or to go by the liquor store or anything. So it was actually pretty easy for me that first year to stay sober. And in the second year, When things started to open up, we started getting out more and you actually saw real life people. I found myself facing some challenges and some obstacles, some temptations that I wasn't ready for. And I relapsed 3 times. And on the third time, I realized, you know what, this is not working. There's something that I'm missing. I need to figure that out. So I did a lot of soul searching, a lot of researching, like thousands of hours of reading and journaling and researching. What can I do? And that's where I came up with the foundations. So I felt for myself, in order to stay sober, I had to build a foundation. I'd already done the get part, but you know, it didn't work out so well based on willpower. So there's the first few phases of building a foundation is getting to know who you are. So there's so many resources out there suggesting, you know, join a Facebook community or read this book or, you know, join a sports team or something, but we're all so different and unique that all, you know, some of those options just don't work for everybody. So building a foundation that's personalized and specific to you has just been tremendous for me. Because I've tried different techniques and I'm like, you know, I don't really like that, or it's not working for me, or it's inconvenient or whatever. And so I move on to the next one. And that's essentially what the foundations are. The Alcohol-Free Foundations program is building what works for you based on you. So, you know, getting to know your personality and your interests and your hobbies. You know, introverts like certain things, where extroverts, you know, they want to go out and they want to play the sports or maybe exercise and be in social settings. So the foundations is not necessarily like a 12-step program where it's laid out and everybody follows the same thing. So yeah, that's where the foundations came from. And it's been working for me. And I've seen many others that it has worked for as well, which is, it's so rewarding.
Oh, that's so wise, because I think, you know, you spoke to this idea that willpower. And I think where it's really interesting is that we think that we have to just start with day one, you know, and we're just going to, you know, stop. And of course, the methodology that I share through this Naked Mind is we have something called the pause, which I've talked about before, but it's really that behavior comes last. But what I love about this idea of foundation that you shared, Molly, is exactly that, that it is the foundation, like it's what we're going to build upon. And so I think sometimes this idea that there's one way to do it and that one way can keep us in that cycle of what you called relapse, or just, you know, getting back to a place where we are drinking again and not understanding what's going on behind the scene and feeling like maybe we're failing or we're doing something wrong. And so I love the idea of just starting with, let's build a foundation. So when you're ready to take a break, you know, the things that are going to play to your strengths. I just think that's so brilliant. So I love that. So tell me the things that you did that kind of helped you in those early days when you were getting back on track. What was part of your foundation?
Yeah. Meditation is something that I've always kind of fell back on. I started an interest in Buddhism when I was in college. I wasn't a practicing Buddhist or anything. I just found it fascinating. I read Zen and the Art of Buddhism and I was like, oh, this is so cool. So that kind of got me into meditation, but really after my third relapse, I was like, let me try this again. And it has become a daily ritual for me. And when I don't meditate, you can tell. The other day, I was kind of irritable in the morning and I was trying to get my pool closed and I couldn't get the air blown out of the tubes. And I was just like cussing and just like throwing things And my partner's like, did you meditate today? And I said, no. And he said, you need to go meditate right now. So, I mean, it really has, it slowed me down, cleared my head, and I get started on the right foot during the day. Something else that I do, and this is really good for anybody that likes to write or is a creative type person, is morning pages, or if you just want to journal in the morning. So right after I meditate, or actually right before I meditate, I do my morning pages. And it's a really good time for me to just have a conversation with myself. I'm literally just having a conversation with myself on paper. So if there's anything that I'm struggling with, or, you know, I don't know how to have this conversation with this person, or what should I do in this business decision, I'm literally having a conversation and the answer shows up on the paper, and it's amazing. So every day without that, I mean, I haven't missed a single day so far since I started it. So
wow,
it's been really helpful. And it also allows a lot of creativity to flow. I don't know how, but it just does. It's kind of like magic for me. So those are two of my very basic, but they're necessities in my life, but they are definitely part of my foundations. And like I said, Terry, I just reading a lot of self-help books and just trying different things. I love Kristen Neff and her book on self-compassion. Huge fan of that. I actually, 2 days ago, I just emailed all of my subscribers this story. 2 days ago, A few weeks ago, my son brought home a kitten. It was a rescue, and it couldn't have been more than 4 or 6 weeks old. It was very, very tiny. So on Tuesday, I noticed, usually I can hear the dogs running around upstairs, and I hadn't heard anything. So I went to go check, and the kitten is laying in the rocks, and it looks really sad and just frail and not like a playful kitten. Anyways, long story short, the cat had ate something in my son's room and probably hadn't eaten all day. And so I'm online Googling things because it's late at night and the vets are closed, trying to figure out how I can induce vomiting. And I put hydrogen peroxide in his mouth. And anybody that's like vet friendly that's listening right now is probably like, what is wrong with you, woman? Because I found out you're not supposed to do that. And so now he probably has some respiratory things. But my point is, that whole night, I'm just like, should I take him to the emergency vet? Like, do I want to spend thousands of dollars on this free kitten? And then, like, what did you do to this cat? Did you hurt it? You know, and I'm thinking of like all these terrible things, and you are such a bad person. And what are you going to do? Just leave this cat here. So the self-compassion kicked in eventually. And I was like, okay, you're probably not the first person that has ever done this. Just relax, breathe, you know. So love her self-compassion for sure.
Yeah. So you have to tell us what happened with the kitten.
Oh, yeah. So I picked him up yesterday. His digestive tract is all clear, no blocks, but he is still pretty lethargic. So we're keeping an eye on him.
Okay. Yeah. I know my cat lovers are out there going, wait, did the kitten die? No. So that's, yeah. So I absolutely love that, because it's true that, you know, we can get into these thought cycles that really sabotage us, and it can feel like, what's happening here? You know, why am I having this spiraling thoughts, or where is this negativity coming from? We start to judge ourselves. We start to get down on ourselves. And I do think compassion is such a gift. And it's one of the tenets that we talk about with This Naked Mind, is like self-compassion and grace. It's just a grace-led journey to go in this alcohol-free journey. It's just so much more challenging without that piece. And so when you're talking about the morning pages and the meditation, you know, I think that we talk about it with This Naked Mind, maybe like tools or even having a morning routine, but I love framing it as a foundation, because then I think it gives you this power of knowing that there's a reason we choose to do this daily, because it sets that foundation to make those choices that are then going to lead us to that, that journey where we're headed of, you know, changing our relationship with alcohol, becoming sober, abstinent, whatever our goal is. But I love the idea of using that, you know, just framing it as a foundation.
Yeah. I feel like there's, I mean, if you talk to anybody that is even considering getting sober, they are terrified. They're just gripped with fear. What is their life going to be like? And when you can reassure that client that I don't expect you to quit drinking right, like today, just because we're working together, do not feel like you have to do that. And the relief that comes over their face is priceless. And I just let them know, we want to build your foundation first. So when you're ready, you'll know you're ready. And it's funny, Terry, because usually right away they end up quitting anyways, because they just, I don't know. I think it's like this relief that comes over them that there's not that pressure. So.
Yeah, we call it, you know, we talk about the pause, like quit trying to quit. And then when we take that pressure off, exactly what you said, then we open up space for curiosity and awareness and, you know, trial and error. And there's so much more available to us when we're not, we don't have this black and white thinking, like, you know, like exactly what you were talking about, I have to muscle my way through and it's going to mean something if I don't have day after day after day after day. And all of my thoughts have to be consumed with not drinking. I think that's one of the hardest parts is that, you know, we, and it's interesting. And I wonder how you, I'd be curious how you navigate this as a coach. Sometimes I feel like, you know, we talk about liberation versus fixation. Like I always want people to feel like, oh, I hardly spend any of my brain power thinking about drinking anymore. Like every once in a while, thoughts will come up, but it's just, there's no emotional charge. But in the beginning, in order to get to that place of liberation, we spend a lot of time thinking about drinking and thinking about not drinking. So do you cover that in your foundation?
About not thinking about drinking?
Yeah. I mean, just this whole thought process of how much time we're spending talking and thinking about not drinking or drinking in order to get to a place where we're no longer thinking and talking about it.
I feel like it just kind of comes naturally with time. I don't really have anything specifically built into it. But I feel like the more you talk about it and the more awareness and the more education you have, I mean, this Naked Mind focus is so a lot on the science behind, you know, what alcohol does to our bodies and our brains and our emotions. Like that is huge. Once you're able to, you know, consume that information, your desire, I feel, at least it did for me, it went down tremendously. So awareness is really important and talking about it. It sounds counterintuitive, but the more you talk about not drinking, I feel like the less you think about it because you're getting your feelings out.
Yeah, absolutely. That's yes, for sure. Yeah. I notice that so much with my clients and, you know, it's like, we're not going to stay in that place where we're always thinking and talking about alcohol. I promise you it does shift. I mean, for me, I'm coming up on 7 years and, you know, it's a little bit challenging probably for you and I to answer this question. Like, how much do you think about drinking? Because I have these conversations about it every single day. So it's always top of mind, but it's not top of mind for me as far as my behavior or my desire. Like I like to think of it as, you know, the emotional charge. Like in the beginning, as you mentioned, there's so much fear and there's so much thought around, you know, the process and the outcome. And there's a lot of emotions attached to that, you know, achieving that place of not drinking or falling back into drinking. And so once that emotional charge is no longer there, I think that's where I really find that the desire just sort of goes away.
Yeah, no, I agree with you for sure.
Yeah. And so tell us about a little bit more about your program. So you've got this, how many weeks is it?
It's around 10 to 12. It just depends on the client. But I've got anywhere from 9 to 12 weeks worth of activities and exercises and coaching calls. So roughly 3 months.
Yeah, I love that. I think 3 months is such a great amount of time to think about really getting, as you put it, this foundation down. And, you know, what are people's, like, is the expectation that when they come to you at the end of the 3 months, they will not be drinking, or are they literally just working on this capsule of, you know, this is the foundation, and now you get to explore not drinking and using this foundation that you built to make that behavior change?
Right. No, great question. The purpose is to build the foundation, because there's so many facets of the foundation that are important. And I want to expose the clients to as much as possible based, again, on who they are, their personality, and their predispositions. I heard it the other day. It was so clever. It's predisposition, not predetermined.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think about what you're saying too, Molly, brings to mind that sometimes when we're drinking, we are showing up in ways that actually it's not who we are. Like, sometimes people will say, well, you know, oh yeah, I'm the life of the party. And then they stop drinking. They're like, actually, I'm kind of an introvert. Like, I realize now I use drinking to be the life of the party because it was uncomfortable. And now I realize I just get to choose to maybe not go out as often, or not hang out as late, or not be around people who drain my energy. And so I think that can be a big part of this too, is that we look at the way we've behaved in the past and maybe get to explore the opportunity to say, wow, now I get to really pay attention to how does it feel on the inside when I choose this behavior, I choose this situation, or I choose this response. And I get to start to notice if that's really aligned with who I want to become.
Yeah, no, you said it perfectly just there. I mean, that's exactly who I was. I was the life of the party. And afterwards, I do not like being the center of attention. So yeah, you really get to know who you are, which is so important. And I hear it from every single client, you know, after they've been drinking for so long, I don't even know what I enjoy to do. I don't even know who I am. And I feel like it's so important. Once you figure out who you are and accept that, and then you can really build on it. You can develop new hobbies or habits and just figure out who is it that you want to become and start working backwards from that. So yeah, no, you said it perfectly. I love that. I wish I would have wrote that down.
Yeah. Well, guess what? It'll be recorded. I think that one of the things that I noticed the longer I do this work is that it becomes less about like running away from alcohol or, you know, leaving. I mean, we leave alcohol behind, but instead of focusing on how do I get rid of alcohol, I find that it's so much more dynamic and exciting to help people move toward what they want rather than focus on what they don't want. And I think that's a big part of what you're talking about here and why that foundation can be so key. One of the things I love to talk to my clients about is this idea of using curiosity. And so it was actually the work of Liz Gilbert, where she shared, it's been a while now, but she shared on a talk I was listening to that, you know, we often talked about this, we have this cultural or society has this message to us that, you know, oh, your purpose, your one purpose in life. And she said that she used to talk to people about that because from an early age, she knew her purpose was writing. And so she just thought, you know, well, most people just have one purpose and you got to find your purpose. And one of her listeners wrote to her, one of her readers, and said, well, that just is a horrible message because it makes me feel worthless because I don't know what my purpose is. And I feel like you're telling me I can't be a whole human and I can't start my life until I define my purpose. And so she really took that to heart and she started looking at, well, wait a minute, if it's not just one purpose, do sometimes people reinvent themselves over time? And she started looking at the people in her life and her mentors, people she admired, people from all walks of lives who had built these incredible lives. And she kind of went back and looked at people like like a Richard Branson or, you know, people that have evolved over time. And she said, what I realized was the people that were the most influential that she looked up to had this sense of curiosity, and that curiosity led them to try new things over time and then to evolve and to move toward the things that were exciting and then let go of the things that did not spark a passion, but that we can all have more than one purpose in life.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. When you feel like there's only one purpose and you don't know what that is, you can totally feel alienated and worthless. So yeah, curiosity is, I just love the word curious. I love to use it because, you know, I mean, as a coach, your role is to be curious with your clients. And I love that sobriety, there's actually a ton of information out there on how to get sober, tips and tricks on, you know, who to follow on Instagram. And I love all the inspirational quotes, but, you know, really getting curious about who you are. And the way that I do it is I make sure that I'm in a very quiet, undisturbed location. And I just take a notebook and a pencil or a pen, and I just sit there and I just listen to the conversation that's going on inside my head. I mean, it's really hard to quiet our minds. So there's always something to be said. just listen to what's going on in there and get curious. Why am I thinking about this? Why is this coming up now? And just start journaling and see what comes up for you. It's pretty fascinating, some of the stuff that you learn about yourself and just 20 or 30 minutes of quiet time.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I do not have that same practice. I do have a gratitude journal that I do every day, but I have heard about morning pages. And so I think you're inspiring me to maybe revisit that. I think about curiosity. One of the things I love to help clients with is this idea of, you know, our intuition. And so, you know, when we're drinking, over drinking, in this cycle of beating ourselves up about drinking, you know, we kind of stop trusting ourselves. And, you know, our no doesn't mean no, our yes doesn't mean yes. And it's a hard place to really tune in to our intuition. And so what I love to help people do is just explore, like, does that sound interesting? And what if you just did a little research and found out more? And so I've had some interesting forays into trying new things in my life. One quick story I'll share is I always wanted to try fencing, you know, like with a sword, like on guard, like fencing. I just had a fascination with it for years. And I thought someday I'm going to try fencing. Well, someday rolled around about a year into sobriety. And it turned out that my son was coming home from college and I live in a small town, but somehow there was a local fencing instructor. And so I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to sign up for this 6-week fencing course and I'm going to just explore and maybe it will become a passion. And so I told my son, do you want to sign up with me? So he said, sure. So we signed up and we went to our local Masonic Hall, I think it is, Veterans Hall. And we showed up for the class. And I'm not kidding you, Molly, the average age, 9 years old. So here I was in my 50s, in my late 50s. Well, what happened was I started learning the fencing, and you know, it's kind of fascinating. You've got the foil and the guard and the whole you know, beekeeper suit, you know, whatever it is. And you know, so we were doing this, but then when we had to actually practice, here I was practicing against these little tiny humans, you know, and I was like, and my instructor's like, okay, now advance. And then I'm so much taller than them and I'm intimidating and they're like literally crying. And I'm thinking, oh dear, this is not fun. So I had my fencing experience. It did not turn into a passion. I did not enjoy it. I don't even think I finished the 6 weeks. I think we got to week 5 and I was like, I think I'm done. And what I love about this though, is that if I had never tried it, I would be having this conversation with you today. And I would say, I'm really fascinated with fencing. Someday I'm going to try fencing, but now I know, oh, I tried it and it's not for me. And I can move on to something else that might be for me. And I also have a great story.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So, you know, curiosity is just, you know, we always get to use it to spur us on to the next thing. And if we start to explore it and it's not interesting anymore, you know, just permission to let it go and discover something else. Life is short.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. No, I love that. So I think you just inspired me because I am in love with the cello and I thought it would be so neat to learn how to play the cello. So, all right.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, just explore it. One of the other things, and now as I'm thinking about telling you this story, Molly, I'm going to make this connection, which is making me laugh. So one of the other things I've had a fascination with, and I've explored it a little bit, but not yet. I'm not quite ready, the timing, but I'm excited to dig into it a little more. And this is beekeeping. We have a beautiful property here that it would be a good spot for it. There's a local organization where I can get information, but I just realized maybe it's the suit. It's the same as fencing. Maybe my fascination is really with fashion.
Masks.
Yeah. So we'll see because, you know, it's like I have this idea and I know that someday I'm going to find out more information about it and I may take up beekeeping. I may not, but I think it's so beautiful when we allow ourselves to just, like you said, explore who we are, maybe things we were fascinated with in the past and we moved away from while we were drinking. And some of those things that have felt heavy, let's lighten things up and bring some curiosity and some playfulness and some exploring back into this journey that we're on. It doesn't all have to be dark and heavy.
Yeah. Playfulness. I'm glad you brought that up. It's been really hard for me to be more playful, but sometimes I force myself to do it. It's easier when my kids aren't home. I can put in my earbuds and crank up some music and dance around the house real silly like, but it really does make you feel so much better. I mean, I would encourage anybody to just write down what would be five activities that sound fun, not that you see yourself doing or that you wish you could do, but would never do, but just sound fun. And once you write them down, you're like, you know what? I wonder if I could really do that. And you start getting more curious and start thinking, and then take a risk on yourself. Just do it. Just put yourself out there like you did. You went to a fencing class, which is amazing. I love that, even though they were little kids, but you stuck with it until you knew that it just wasn't for you. And it's okay to give yourself permission to back out.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always wanted to learn to play the ukulele. So a year ago, my husband gave me a ukulele for my birthday. And so I am learning to play it. It's going a little slow. It's not turning into this, you know, passion project, but you know, it's fun. It feels creative. It's something that's fairly easy and it is tapping into something that I've always been curious about. So there are simple little things that can really help you build this foundation. I think part of what this foundation work that you're doing, Molly, that I love is we get to a glimpse of who we always have been. Like, who's that person inside of us that we've moved away from or has been missing while we were drinking? And now we just get to say, wow, I want to get to know you again.
Yes, yes, exactly. The inner child.
Yeah, that playful child. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, I love that. Getting to know yourself is not easy because of all of the ingrained messages, the negative self-beliefs, the self-talk, sometimes lack of confidence. I mean, it does take some time to build a lot of these things up. So give yourself permission to give things up when you realize that it's not really working out. Also give yourself permission to just show up. You know, sometimes that's an accomplishment in and of itself. There's been a lot of times that I may have tried something new. I remember the first day I went to AA was absolutely terrifying. You know, when you don't know anybody, your physical and chemical body is kind of just like screaming at you, what is going on? I mean, there's just a lot going on in those moments. So, you know, try and put yourself out there, even if you are an introvert. You may not like being around other people, you know, there's so many options that you never know. It could open up a new door, you know, showing up to Fenzie. Maybe you would have met somebody that day that could have introduced you to a professional ukulele instructor. You never know.
There you go. Yes. Well, and I think that, you know, sometimes we retreat so easily. We give up on ourselves so easily when we're caught in this over-drinking cycle. And I think allowing ourselves to be challenged a little bit and to pursue something that is a little bit difficult or feels a little daunting or scary, that's just a beautiful way to honor that we're stronger than we think, that we have our own back, and that we are whole and capable.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'll hear your mind tell you, like, this is uncomfortable, I don't like this, but you have to learn to turn that off, because it'll just take you right back to where you were in your little comfort zone in your PJs, laying on your couch doing nothing. So try to remember that the brain isn't always there to help you. It wants you to get back to the way you were. And we're trying to move forward. We're trying to develop new skills. We're trying to uncover that inner child, you know, who you've always been, but really just quiet it down and said, you know, I don't want you around right now because I'm going to drink. And, you know, so I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, one of the reasons I was excited to have this conversation is I think what, you know, I'm really moving into a place where I'm going to be working more with women after alcohol. And I think that you offer such a beautiful place of, you know, there's almost this three-part journey. And I think that sometimes we miss the first part and the third part, and we focus all of it on just the behavior of not drinking. And so I love that, you know, you are offering this even before we stop drinking. Let's start building a foundation so that we have success when we're in stage two. And then I get to invite people into, now let's flourish in this after alcohol life. Let's be in a place where life just continues to be a beautiful place that we want to grow into, and we want to have more connections, more vibrancy, more possibilities, more passion. And so I just think it's so fun to see that you're looking at this journey at the, you know, very beginning, and there's so much need for that.
Yeah. Well, I love your program too, because I do get asked, well, what happens at the end? Do you just leave me? And I can now say, no, you can go work with Terry, because she's going to turn you into this beautiful butterfly. So, I mean, that's such a vital part that a lot of people don't focus on either. There's, you know, spiritual coaches and that, you know, but there's not really anybody that focuses on the sobriety as the core piece of becoming who you really are and growing into somebody else. So I really love that you do that.
Yeah. Well, it's so, that's what I love about as where we started. We're right back where we started, you know, meeting people that there's a reason that we got to connect and what synergy there is in this. And so tell us where people can find more about Molly and your program and all the things.
Okay. Yeah, my website is asyouarelifecoaching.com. And you can subscribe to my newsletter. I'm just putting out my first newsletter in October, which I'm really excited about. You can learn all about how fall is a great time to reevaluate how you've been going the year. And I've got an awesome recipe for this really cool Halloween drink that you can put dry ice in, and it looks all spooky and bubbly. So that'll be really cool.
Yeah. Awesome. Good. Well, I will definitely send people your way who are just, you know, kind of curious about how do I start this journey. Again, I think it's a beautiful offer in this space. And so thank you so much for joining today, Molly. It was really fun to talk with you.
Yeah, it was so great to be here. Thanks, Terry. I appreciate it.
Hey, I want to thank you for tuning in and listening to The Sober Edge. This is a place to have important conversations and a safe place to question everything you thought you knew about drinking. If you're looking for your sober edge, I invite you to connect with me at thesobernutritionist.com, where you can grab my free resource, 5 Healthy Reasons to Take a Break. And I would be grateful if you would take a moment to rate and review this podcast so together we can reach more people who are looking for their sober edge.